and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. Thanks. Read a little thing I wrote called a Federalist Paper. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter. Nope. I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Hey, Bitcoin Maxis. It's the Tokens Radio Show with our hosts, Christy Matthews, Linda Kent, and Cameron Walfort.
Well, good afternoon. This is the Tokens Radio Show where we talk about all things crypto, blockchain, and Web3, and my name is Christy Matthews, and I'm here with
Cameron Walfort and our excellent producer, Travis.
Yes. And Linda Kent, she's on assignment today. And so hope you're having a good day, Linda, whatever you're doing on your assignment there. So, hey, we just wanted to let you know that we're on Telegram and Twitter at Tokens Radio Show. The live chat is open right now, so come and join us at KCNR1460.com, and let's light up the phone lines at 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. Oh, gosh, today, what a day we're going to have.
It's been a crazy, crazy week.
Yeah, it sure has. You know, we're going to have a guest on a little bit later on here in just about 10, 15 minutes, The Voice. This is the voice of wisdom, the voice of calm. It's going to be a wonderful segment to have him on with us today. He'll be here in just a bit. And if you missed last week's show with Nick Hill from StoreX, go ahead and catch that on our website at tokensradioshow.com, and you can see the replay there. So before we get started here, we have a word from one of our affiliate partners. Tokens Radio Show has partnered with Swan Bitcoin. We are Swan Bitcoin customers and chose them because Swan is, well, easy to work with and inexpensive. Set up a Bitcoin savings plan and never miss out on the dips. It's perfect for both new and experienced Bitcoiners. Get the free book, Inventing Bitcoin, the technology behind the first truly scarce and decentralized money, and earn $10 of Bitcoin when you use our affiliate link, swanbitcoin.com/tokensradioshow. That's swanbitcoin.com/tokensradioshow. Yes, Swan Bitcoin, they're really good people. If you're looking to get into Bitcoin, wanting to stack your sats, I can't think of a better company to work with. It's a system where you can just set it and forget it. If you want to buy $10 of Bitcoin, you can buy it daily, weekly, monthly, one at a time. You just set up whatever buying system that you want to go with, and you're set and you're good to go. My gosh, what a week it's been, right, Cameron?
A crazy week.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's just, if you haven't been around and haven't heard, yes, it's been a wild week in the markets. Stock market has gone down to its lowest of lows in quite some time. I heard 1939 not the New York Stock Exchange, but the S&P, as low as 1939. And, of course, you know, the bloodbath that happened in the crypto market as well. And the big story, the big news, is what was going on with Terra Luna.
And, yes, so for those who aren't familiar, Terra Luna is a decentralized blockchain, just like most of what we talk about on here, with a remarkable feature of algorithmic stablecoin. So this is a coin that is tethered to the price of the U.S. dollar, but it uses algorithms or programs to keep it tethered to that price by burning and minting its primary coin, Luna, on the network.
Yes. You know, and before we go into that, I'd just like to say that, You know, it's funny because I had a couple people come up to me during the week, Cameron, and they had said, you know, look at that Bitcoin. And it was almost as if they were trying to, you know, validate their position that, you know, it's faux, right? It's not real. And I had to explain to them that, you know, well, this is running on the rails of a fiat paradigm. We're buying Bitcoin with fiat. And so, yes, it's natural that the crypto market is going to run somewhat secular or in a similar fashion. I shouldn't say secular, but in a similar fashion to what's going on with the stock market. So, yes, there's going to be ups and downs. And so have you had ups and downs in your 401k? Have you had ups and downs in your portfolio? You're going to have ups and downs in crypto.
And I was going to say what follows that logic is you might as well say Apple and Tesla are fake because they're volatile.
Right.
And so, you know, they're not real companies.
Yes.
Gold is fake because it moves up and down in price. And silver, who could trust that?
Exactly. So, but to those who lost a lot of money, it's real losses. They lost their fiat. They're feeling stress and uncertainty. You know, many have invested money that they cannot lose or be able to wait for the market to recover. And for those people, we should have empathy for them. And I know I certainly do. It's not a comfortable feeling to be in. We've been through a couple of these markets, so we do know that they're secular. And so you can kind of ride through them and know that we are going to come back. Things are going to be fine. There are going to be some new players coming on the scene and some of the old players going away, but Bitcoin is here to stay.
Yes, and just for a quick little clarity, because I don't know that I specified what happened well enough, these people weren't just invested in a crypto that volatility is expected in. What happened was the crash of a stablecoin, so their algorithmic stablecoin was essentially duped or tricked into losing all of its value. So these people thought they had something that was worth a dollar, $1 to $1 per coin that they were holding or token that they were holding. And what happened is in the matter of 24 hours, that dollar became less than a penny and on a rapid climb to absolutely nothing. So where the empathy should really be felt is that these were not people that was, oh, ride at your own risk. You're in a volatile market. These were people that had a reason to trust that this was a stable dollar, and they weren't just going out there willy nilly.
Right.
And,
these are institutional players. They're large and well known investors in the market. They saw the potential in this project. And really, what happened is that there was a large sale that prompted the algorithmic functions of this coin to start working, and the sale of the token caused such disruption that it caused a vacuum. Now, this happens in all markets. This happens on the stock market too. So was that a bad actor that came in and did that? No, this is just how financial markets operate, and that's the ugly part of the financial game.
And it's noteworthy that this isn't a matter of bad crypto hygiene or anything like that. Like,
correct.
No one was just out there being a moron, so to speak. And what's also noteworthy is this isn't independent to crypto by any means, or even the crypto USD. I mean, we see the collapse of the dollar on a yearly basis looking at our dollar. So for that rationale that you're looking at something not volatile outside of crypto and USD is safer, there is something very noteworthy to mention that you're losing over 10% a year on your dollar, if I remember correctly on that.
Right. Now, there are some problems, you know, inherent problems with algorithmic coins anyway. They're inherently fragile. You're using automated intelligence to try to balance the purchase of one token with the sale or the burn of another token, and balance that out to the dollar peg,
And what I would argue it the biggest problem and what's going to be a long-lasting problem is that decentralized finance is not actually designed for a stable token. Each underlying currency to a chain is designed to be its dollar, so to speak, and that is that while it may go up and down in price against the dollar, so does yen, so does a euro, so does a pound. Sure. And while you're trying to sit here and make an algorithmic stablecoin, the issue with a stablecoin that's a nationally backed currency is that there's no nation backing this currency. So what you're right. truly riding on is an algorithm functioning in a way that is, at this moment, only theoretical.
Yes, and it's a stablecoin. It was the fourth largest stablecoin that wasn't backed by corporate bonds, not backed by some other widely accepted asset. It was backed by Bitcoin and Tether and some other digital assets.
Yes.
And, let's put it that way.
And the primary token of their chain, Luna, is designed to, if I understand correctly, mint and burn to protect that price.
Correct.
And then what ended up happening is way too much of it ended up minting because there was a need for so many dollars out there. And then because those dollars ended up getting used, the burn just couldn't happen correctly. And
yeah.
those dollars crashed in price. People then began selling. So the burn couldn't happen fast enough to meet the constant drop in price.
Right.
And it's kind of a complicated one. I'm trying to use as simple terms as possible on that.
Well, we have the voice on the line, but before we get to the voice, there's a great white paper written on this subject about the stability of stable coins, especially those that are algorithmic stable coins. And it's a white paper called Built to Fail. It's the inherent fragility of algorithmic stable coins. And I'm going to put that in the chat in case you want to go ahead and take a look at it. So, you know, like we said earlier, there were many people, investors with great reputations who were behind this project. And so it had potential, but it just hasn't been perfected yet. And having said that, unless you have a final word, should we bring on the voice?
Oh, let's bring him on. We can continue with him.
Absolutely. Hey, voice, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Oh, wonderful.
Doing excellent.
Awesome, awesome.
It's a wonderful day that you're here.
Talking about Luna, yeah, it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, so I would actually really love to hear your piece on that, or any speculations that you've made over the past, you know, week or so of it.
Well, I think that hearing you both speak a little bit just a few moments ago, the main thing that we need to understand about algorithmic stable coins is that really none have succeeded yet.
Right.
I mean, that's the one main thing that there's a lot of opportunity going on here. And with blockchain in general, there's great ideas. And we just haven't had one. I mean, a Maker is probably close enough, you know, to what Luna or Terra UST would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But even a Maker is at least backed by something, right? Maker is backed by other digital assets, where Luna was backed by, UST and Luna itself, UST especially, wasn't backed by anything. It was just the flexing of the algorithm going up and down where people could maximize earnings using arbitrage, right? So if one would slip in value, you could maximize that by getting more or burning more. And it would algorithmically adjust, but as you just stated, that there wasn't an ability to burn enough to maximize and bring that pair value back in line. I think the max value, and somebody could correct me, I think it was 100 million, but we were talking about billions of dollars worth of
right.
this currency that they were trying to liquidate. And once you do that, you have complete inflation, and it just inflated to the moon in a bad way.
Yeah.
And what this could be comparable to is if we were still backed by gold on our dollar and someone just found all of the gold, like just infinite gold came
about.
Gold
it all, exactly.
Yeah, and okay, so now gold's worthless, and now there goes your dollar if it was pegged to it.
And really, at least there's an asset that has value elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
So even if you do that, it still holds value. This was based upon air. And I know that we talk about that as far as crypto. That's a term we throw around or people throw around. That what is it backed by? Well, even our dollar is backed by nothing.
Right.
Right? There's no gold in there. We're backing it based upon our faith.
Right.
As citizens and elsewhere in the world, that there is some value in it. It's just what we've perceived it to be. Not the way it used to be. So that being said, Luna was a mix of crypto and faith in that respect, that these rubber bands would flex back and forth. And I think a lot of people, I know we had a lot of experts that were in this, but there was a lot more people, experts also, who said this was just doomed for failure.
Yes.
And I think we could probably say that about a lot of DeFi projects at this moment in time. Okay. It's a nascent technology. It's just so new.
Yes.
And I think that's what we get when things are that new. You know, it's you're going to get experimentation. And that brings us down, of course, because people want opportunity, so you get involved in these projects. And because you don't want to miss out on an opportunity, but that's just not oversold, that hey, this is an experiment.
Right.
And things go wrong very easily.
It's kind of like when the internet came, you know, online in the 1990s. It's the same things that were going on there. It's like, why would you use that? Oh, I wouldn't send a message on there. You know, my mail, you know.
Nothing's
safe on it, you bet. And look at the companies that were born out of that technology. And here we are today to the third iteration of the internet, you know, Web3. So it still keeps going, and you're going to have winners and losers. And I applaud each and every one of them that takes a chance of just moving this forward.
Exactly.
Moving the movement forward. But having said that, I mean, maybe we could put Terra Luna to bed at this point, and let's talk about you, Voice. I mean, we're talking with the Voice, and give us a call here at 530-605-4567. If you'd like to talk with the Voice, the phone lines are open. So, Voice, tell us a little bit about yourself, and my gosh, you are all over social media. I don't know how you do it. You're an amazing man. But tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into cryptos.
Oh, I couldn't be doing crypto today without my family. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is they make it all possible. I guess it's just life and how it brings you in certain directions. You know, you could call it fate or whatever you want to call it. And I am not a technical person. We've spoken quite a few times. I've become technical, but I come from a blue-collar family. Father was a truck driver, so I'm not trained in tech per se. But around the 2010-2011 timeframe, there's a few of us who have this story. I just had a friend who introduced me to, at that time, Bitcoin, and Bitcoin for me was something of a journey. It was way too hard, and I think you've probably heard a lot of people talk about that. Just the understanding of what it was wasn't really fully fleshed out from, even today, it's still quite complicated, to understand it. And for me, even to set up a wallet or follow some of these forums and groups, I wasn't prepared. I'm not a technical person, at least at that time. And you can't take somebody who doesn't really know anything except maybe at times maybe playing a game on a computer or using Microsoft Word or PowerPoint or something, you know, just reading PDFs. That's about as advanced as I was. And you can't take that person and put them in front of this kind of technology and expect them to even comprehend what it is. But my friend kept encouraging me. And so somewhere around 2013, so we're going 3 years in, after listening to radio shows, speaking about technology and reading as much as I possibly could, so many years of reading, 2013, I was finally able to install and sync a Bitcoin wallet. Took me 2 full days. I did turn it off. My computer was getting really, really hot, and I think that's where the technological changes happen. And I realized at that time, since I had passed that hurdle, when you're learning, you kind of have to hit a you hit these steps along the way, and once you have that confidence, you're like, wow, I understand this. I can do this. That started my journey. And then from 2013 to 2015, I started just an enormous amount. You would call it an addiction, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably best said it was an addiction. And being addicted to learning and understanding 2013 to 2015. And by 2015, I had stopped working in the corporate life, and I became full-time in sharing and teaching information about blockchain to normal people, from family members to, you know, 90-year-old grandmas. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for free. So we're going in my 8th year now, free education. And in that journey, of course, other communities that I was participating in sort of adopted me, and I would build free videos. You know, so if you had trouble setting up something on your own, I would create a video just for you to show you exactly where the hurdles were that you could overcome. And I called them real use videos, and you can still see some of them I have out there. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to some older blockchains and they have their tutorial videos, you'll recognize a voice, and that voice is mine. Because I would do it for free. And I just realized that if we can't make this easier
right.
for us, there's no way that we can really adopt this technology. And that's my journey. And Divi, of course, is where it sort of culminates.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I met like-minded people who said, wow, this technology is great, but it's made for nerds. And if it's made for nerds, that just means nerds become the next, you know, round of bankers. We all work for them. They control everything. And so, not being a nerd, although I am nerdy today, I met other people who were like-minded and said, we should be able to make blockchain easier. And that's where I am now. So,
just to circle back a tad, that comes back to that internet bit where the internet was for nerds originally. I mean, you had to be like a problem solver to use the internet in the 90s. And
oh, yeah.
deal with that Helmets dial-up and connection all that. And all this fun stuff. And then some practical nerds came about and were like, hey, we should make this a little bit more user-friendly so consumers can use it, and then there will be a massive enterprise adoption.
Right.
And exactly. voila, we have Google, Amazon, and all of these multi-billion-dollar companies built off the internet.
Yeah, we had Netscape Navigator there for a while.
Yes. Earthlink.
They said, you don't have to do it with text. We can actually make images here. Yeah. You can click buttons instead of typing something in.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Well, Voice, we have about a minute before we go off to break. But when we come back, we'd love to talk a little bit more about the Divi project. It's something we've talked quite a bit about on the radio show. I'm a big fan, as you well know, and I've made two-thirds of our team here big fans, and I know Cameron's coming along with that as well. And this will probably be a good place to leave off there, and we'll just come right
Perfect.
On back, and we'll take it up from there. So this is Tokens Radio Show. It's KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and we'll see you back in about 3 minutes.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live, you see, tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple, naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet, Mount Shasta spring water.
Remember us, the Tula Kids? Well, we're back, and we would like to ask you a few questions.
Do you love TV? Do you like low prices? Call our daddy.
Hi, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite. You know that by not calling the 800 number for your satellite needs, you get local service, faster installation, and most importantly, we speak your language. We ask the questions to ensure you get the right package for you and your family. We do big dishes, we do little dishes, we do internet dishes, we even do dish dishes.
Dad, I have never seen you do dishes.
That's because I do them most of the time.
So do I.
No, you don't.
Hey, kids, we're working here. Give us a call, and we'll help you figure out the best for your family. Whether it's dish services or local antenna help or streaming services, call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474. Or visit us on the internet at btsatellite.com.
B&T Satellite is a DISH authorized retailer. Restrictions apply. Ask for details.
And welcome back. If you guys want to join in on the conversation, the number to call is 530-605-4567. And we're speaking with a voice right now. When we left off, we were talking a little bit about Divi. But if you could give us a little bit more of a deep dive on what makes it really unique and maybe some things it's doing different from some of the bigger blockchains that are also aiming to offer user friendliness now, I think that would be a great jumping off point for resuming.
I think those are great questions. You know, what is the difference? Because on the surface level, we all kind of look the same, right? And we look at those superficial things like, well, is volume there? Divi is different in that the tech is assumed, right? So we know that cryptocurrency is technical. And we are, if you want to say loosely, we are a grandchild of Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is in the heritage of the blockchain. So from the get-go, Satoshi's philosophy of sovereignty is the granite, the foundation for everything. So what makes Divi different, as long as we have that to stand upon as a community and developers and coin, is the specific philosophy of ease of use. Mm-hmm. And we can't break or sacrifice sovereignty on ease of use. And that probably separates us from other projects. So sovereignty stands tall, and ease of use is the addition that we add to it. So there's a difficulty, I should say a mountain of difficulty that we would, you can imagine, because of the tech being so complicated, that Divi developers have, that they have to overcome. Ease of use is the guide for everything that they're making. And even as the technology changes, right, Bitcoin doesn't stop changing, Litecoin doesn't stop changing, Divi doesn't stop changing, and we adopt similar technologies, especially if they help that sovereignty or privacy or those kinds of things. But to add on ease of use is a giant, giant hill to overcome, because most of those features are quite complicated. Users have difficulty using them on their own, and we all want that opportunity. So at each iteration of development, it has to be grounded sort of like a compass The compass points you in that direction of ease of use, and it can never be perfected, right? It can only drive you in that direction. On the other side, what makes us different, I think when we look at other systems, we're not just a wallet per se. The wallet itself is a method of managing your coins, right? But it's also a tool to use the coins for work, right? And that would be the difference between what we have and what many others would have. Most of the options that are ease of use, and there are quite a few of them out there, are centralized options that deal with blockchain. And we can think of things that are common, Robinhood and those kinds of options that are out there. They're completely centralized. It's, if you're willing to sacrifice sovereignty, right, that self-control of your assets, at the same time, when you do that, they can obviously make it easier because they control the entire ecosystem. And it's not related to blockchain at all. It's essentially more or less just databases, and you have credits and debits within their system for those currencies. You work within their frameworks and their controls, and you trust them, obviously. Otherwise, you wouldn't use them. But as we know from history, banks, institutions, and governments, and all sorts of things break that trust. Everything that that Divi builds is so far away from needing the trust. It's completely trustless in every single application, even if there are options built into it. Divi doesn't control keys. Divi doesn't control coins, no matter what coin that you would have in the mobile wallet or even in the desktop wallet, which is just Divi at this moment. They're all yours, and you control them. It's complete self-custody. There's nobody who can stop you from spending or sending it, similar to what Bitcoin would be. You have complete control over your own assets. And so the difference would be is in most of the cases, there are some great options out there, don't get me wrong, but most of the options that are easy because you live in their world,
right,
and they control everything.
Yeah. And so when we're talking about Divi and being adopted as a currency, it's great that it's easy moving on from the fiat world and onto the on-ramping onto Divi, and that there's easy tools within the wallet. But as far as being recognized as a currency, a lot of the bar people hold that to would be whether or not it's accepted and maybe stores or as an enterprise with, you know, can consumers use it? So is there anything beyond the staking features right now, any implementations in the real world where the everyday user could take advantage of it?
Well, the answer is yes. There are communities around the world that do transact with Divi. There are businesses that transact exclusively, at least mostly, with Divi. Anybody has this as an option or opportunity. We saw just recently that the people were one-to-one, you know, so you're dealing with somebody, let's say you met on, I don't know, this is in my mind where they met, but they met on Craigslist, and the two gentlemen met together, and they actually paid with their crypto for a car. They bought the car, and so on a small level, they're able to transact that way. On a larger level, there are coffee suppliers, if that's the right word for it. There are maple syrup manufacturers that are up in Canada, where their whole industry at this moment of time, he's smaller scale, but he does all of his business. He doesn't sell any of it except for Divi. So it's very cottage industry, and I think that's probably important to recognize. Divi, because it's a smaller currency, right? It's not well known like Bitcoin at this moment in time. Divi is more grassroots, and Divi wants to build out the tools for that first, and the first set of those tools have to be the ease of use for the user. And that's where we're laying that groundwork. As we start moving forward, you will start to see, again, we like to use the term iterative, we will start to see other things happening to where they will make it easier for businesses, or I should say at least developers, to build upon and access the blockchain tools that we have either in the Divi wallet or the blockchain itself directly. And anybody could do that now, but it needs to be made so it's crypto made easy. It can't be complicated. It needs to use at least familiar tools and familiar assets that you can build those. And so you could build a point of sale system. It should be easy when you do that. And it should be still self-sovereign and self-custody in that respect from the business owner, just as it would be from the individual user who has control over their own assets. It should be easy for both. So it's about layering the bricks in the wall first. And so we're focusing on the community first. Community first at this moment.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And speaking about community, just two thoughts here, is the ease of use is Mochi, Masternode setup, and using Mochi, for instance, I'm thinking of particular charities. There's one I think you're very familiar with that's running in Haiti right now, where they're using a masternode to where they're using their rewards to support the children in this orphanage, where at before their Divi masternode was online, they had to make choices as to whether they were going to have shampoo, toothpaste, or get food. And the Divi masternode has normalized as much as possible to where they can now have both. And it has made significant change in their lives. Can you speak a little bit more about that, especially with the masternode and maybe other use cases with what we can do with those rewards?
Yeah, I mean, they could be used for foundations, but the greatest example, of course, that you're speaking about is that humanitarian effort. And that's not the only one. There's also the effort in Venezuela where they have the this entire community. This one gentleman has gone in, and we know about the currency there, how it's just rough for those people. He's set them up so they can transact with Divi. And there's stores down there that will transact with Divi. It's not stores like you would see, like a Safeway or something. They're small little corner shops, and that's where everybody goes to get everything they need in that one block area, you know, radius. And they're using Divi. They're also using masternodes. So he uses a lot of times we donate to him anyway to supplement what the masternode is doing, because we want to give him more. Mm-hmm. And then masternode owners have been donating to him. And he's been feeding these about 150 children, I think, almost weekly for, I could be wrong on this number, but I think it's been at least 2.5 years. 2.5 years.
That's incredible.
Feeding this whole entire community. So, I mean, there's a lot of humanitarian efforts, but there are benefits that you have. If you're running some foundation, you can help fund the foundation. These are some things that people do. And then there's, of course, then there's just regular masternode owners who use the funds to help themselves, right? And that's okay also. You can do both if you want. So it's, masternodes are a great way to work, right? It's not passive. There is some work you have to do a little bit on it, but we make it as easy as possible. You can get the returns on those rewards. ROR is like what we call it. As that masternode is working, it's earning, just like you would if you went to a job. You work a certain amount of time, you're going to get paid. And with the masternodes, they work a certain amount of time. If you look at the yearly average, they get a specific rate per year, and that's a little bit flexible based upon participation. But, yeah.
So just to comment on a couple of things. First, I totally thought you were going to mention Venezuela as the market response as far as places going to accept the currency. Because I think that whole project is just absolutely fantastic. But what you did touch on with it being a little bit more in the private markets, I actually really love that about the project where it's at right now, in the sense that if there's a catastrophic failure, it's not as catastrophic. It's a smaller community, less people to lose. There's a lot of room to rebuild if there's an error, whereas if you're looking at something that's been as massively adopted as Luna, there's no bounce back. Well, fingers crossed for them that there is a bounce back, but it's very unlikely to have a chance at regrowing or correcting yourself with such a public failure, so to speak. So I think that Divi is very much doing the going down the right pathway and the bricks in the right order. But then going back over to Oh, shoot. I just lost my train of thought.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, sorry.
You know,
Go ahead,
boys.
I was going to say that there are some subtle differences, and this isn't a jab or anything. It's about understanding the tech. When you talk about something like Luna, that's centralized. So that's the one thing we have to think about is that nothing about Divi's blockchain is centralized. It runs on its own. The community runs it. That doesn't mean that there aren't developers, individuals. There's not as many small participants helping build as much as it is Divi Labs. But Divi Labs will work on and it'll update. There's a developer there that works on the core and makes the great things. And Vaults is something that, you know, maybe we'll talk about. That they work on. But essentially everybody volunteers to use the software. And if it wasn't for the community, just as it would be for Bitcoin, if no Bitcoin miners wanted to mine anything, nothing would be going on. It's based upon the community itself, where now you have the opposite. So if Bitcoin Core or Divi Labs said, we're stopping the blockchain, they could say it all that they would want. And
these are
nonprofit organizations, right? They could say that they're stopping the blockchain all they want. Here you have an example, and this is a little bit of a dig because I'm more of a decentralized, focused, philosophical person. You have a blockchain where they could stop, through contracts and otherwise, the blockchain. They actually stopped trading in most of these places. And that tells you that we're dealing with something that's more akin to a bank.
Right.
A bank could shut its doors. A bank could lock everything down. And that comes down to smart contracts. And Divi isn't a smart contract technology. It's a layer one. That's a technical term for the type of coin in Litecoin and Bitcoin. And Divi would be layer one.
Clarify, I didn't want to compare Divi to Luna in the sense of centralization or anything in that matter. More so just the fact that with any blockchain, we've seen a handful of them come out the gate hot and then go dropping off because they came out too hot too quick and then there was some sort of fatal flaw. This is a great way to avoid that fatal flaw being fatal.
Exactly.
And
it's controlled by the community. It's not controlled by, you know, one organization or one person making those decisions. And so, yeah, I wasn't defending it. I was taking advantage of your comment.
Just wanted to make sure that I wasn't stepping on any toes or anything.
Purely taking advantage. So, I mean, that's what it really comes down to. And the value is deemed by the community, right? It's the same thing with Bitcoin.
Sure.
Bitcoin is value is deemed by the people who own Bitcoin. And Divi is the same way, where in these other cases, it's not, you know.
We're talking with The Voice at 530-605-4567. And I've got a question for you. Divi has been in the news quite a bit lately. Obviously, making crypto easy has gotten the attention of, I believe it is the largest football league in Spain? La Liga?
Yeah, La Liga. It's the Middle Eastern North African region. And so we are a sponsor now of La Liga in that region. And so there's an entire portion of the world that is unbanked or has difficulty banking that is getting the visibility of the Divi wallet. And we're making it, you should say, more or less necessarily, more or less we're making the current wallet has a lot of the language would be Western world language. We have English and we have French and we have Spanish. We're now bridging out to where we're putting in more languages in the wallet. That's going to be a big drive for us, is reaching the worldwide market so they have these opportunities also that we get to take advantage of. And just as we've seen in Venezuela, you know, people can transact together one-to-one in small transactions or large transactions. They should have this as an opportunity too. And I think that's where Satoshi's vision would bring us back to. He wanted us all to be able to have this opportunity, and we're just trying to make it as easy as possible for everyone to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I saw a statistic the other day that said something that 87% of the world is either under an autocratic or authoritarian government that is double or triple digit inflation. So the numbers are what, 4 billion people who do not have personal property rights, and they're under, you know, the thumb of their government. And Bitcoin and Divi are those opportunities to have personal property for every person that's on the planet. That's amazing, isn't it? You can't take it away from them.
Is completely unseizable property.
That's correct.
Fantastical.
Boyce, do we still have you there? Okay.
Like
he dropped off. That's okay. We're going to get him right back on. So, yeah, the Divi Project is, I'm learning some things here today that I didn't quite realize. I had a sense of things. And Voice is back. Hey, we
I'm
lost
back.
You for a minute.
That happens. I
That's
travel
okay.
a lot.
That's right. We filled the dead air. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we've got about 7-8 minutes left before the show is over, and wanted to touch a couple of things. You know, you Divi released its mobile wallet within the last year, which is really cool as a Divi user. Mm-hmm. It's a fabulous wallet, and it is one where you can also stake your Masternode rewards, if you so choose to do it that way. That's pretty cool. And I know that there are some things that are coming down the pipeline, and I'm not sure how much you can talk about it, but is there going to be a debit card at some point in time that will be available? And
In the future.
Okay.
Yeah. In the future, that is on the roadmap. Of course, you have to build those layers I was talking about, those bricks that have
right.
to be built
yeah.
up first. And once those are done, there are financial negotiations going.
Of course.
You gotta remember about the debit cards. That makes it a little bit more centralized. So we wouldn't necessarily be something that would deal with the blockchain, but the blockchain could then interact with whatever service that
right.
was built, that little mediator in between. So you could go ahead and have your, this is the same thing with Litecoin, right? Litecoin. Has a card and
right.
yeah, yeah.
Yes, I love that card. And then also, just recently, the deployment of eDivi. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that's going to now fit into the ecosystem?
Yeah, eDivi is an extension, or I should say, it's an addition of the Divi Everywhere goal. Right. So there's philosophies. We have the philosophy of sovereignty. Self-custody of your own assets, the philosophy that's driving development, which is the crypto made easy. And then we have this goal of Divi Everywhere. And Divi Everywhere doesn't mean that the entire unbanked world is going to be with Divi, but it means that there should be an option for them to have the ability to use Divi. And so eDivi actually is multi-layered. eDivi brings in an opportunity for people who choose to participate in DeFi, use their Divi assets on the DeFi protocol. And you do that mainly through the Ethereum blockchain. So there will be a pairing of Divi, a one-to-one pairing with Divi through a smart contract. And you will put your real Divi on the Divi blockchain, will be put into the contract, and then mint for you would be eDivi. And then you can go ahead and use any kind of wallet, it's just an Ethereum wallet, to store that eDivi, or use that eDivi in again, like a DeFi, like Unicorn Swap or Ice Cream. You know, they've got all these great names. And so you'll be able to participate in those protocols. And so you'll be able to use, you know, the hypothecation. They call it staking. It's not really staking, but the hypothecation aspect of loaning out your coins, leveraging that, and as they sell, you get a percentage, and yeah, you can earn that way. So Divi Everywhere is why we have the eDivi protocol. Mm-hmm.
That's fabulous. Boyce, we have a comment here in the chat room, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. It's from Railroad Car 10, and it says, you're wrong if you don't think that crypto is feasible. The feds have been doing it for some time, and any linked or she linked. Is it seizable? It says feasible here, but seizable. And has a linked article by the Department of Justice And I'm getting to the article so I could tell you what it says.
So we should just touch real quick that he's referring to centralized exchanges and people having it seized from those, which is not a non-custodial wallet. So when you're holding it in a centralized exchange, as we barely got to touch on earlier, you're not actually holding your funds. It's more like holding stock and trusting a bank or an institution to hold that crypto for you.
Exactly.
And them to be good actors with it. Crypto itself, if it is in a non-custodial wallet, your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, anything like that, unless it's within its protocol itself, could not be seized from your wallet.
It's technically not possible. Now, you could be compelled, right? So let's say you and I had a disagreement, and I owed you something. You could potentially take me to court, and maybe through court you could have the court compel me to turn over some form of asset to make you whole again, right? You could be compelled. And you may choose not to, right? Because, of course, the court can't uncover or discern your controls over this wallet or the self-custody application. So unless you decide you can do it, you can get in big trouble. So the only thing you could do is potentially compel someone to, but you can't. It's technically not possible. But custodial-wise, yeah, you could think about if you're dealing with exchanges. In fact, there's very few exchanges. Even what we call as decentralized exchanges today, they're not decentralized. They are closer to being decentralized, but if they have the ability to have an email and you have to log in with a password, you have to register your phone, and you don't get your keys with it when you're putting it in, then you can consider it gone if they decide to just close your account.
Right.
Or if the Fed decides that they think that you're doing something that they don't like, then they contact Coinbase and say, hey, do you have this user?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Coinbase is going to lock your account. And maybe through courts, if they're going to even go that route, they could confiscate whatever credits you would have with Coinbase, and Coinbase would turn over. And I'm not saying Coinbase would do that. I'm just saying it could happen.
Right.
Would turn over those funds. And so that's Gemini, Coinbase, Kraken. It's all of those.
Yeah.
It's all the exchange. They're no different than a bank.
Exactly. And it pretty much if you can buy crypto with fiat with on the exchange, that means it's a centralized exchange. For easy terms. Anyway, we are coming up to the end of our show. Anything you want to run by us? Some places to find you? Last closing comments? Fun stuff like that?
Well, you always can find me on Twitter. I'm at No Crypto Show on Twitter. That's KNOWCRYPTOSHO. And that's where you can find me most of the time. You can go to any of the other social platforms that are communication, Telegram, Discord, Signal. You can find me there. But Twitter is probably the easiest place to send me questions. And, maybe next time we'll talk about some of those cool technologies like the vaults and those kinds of things.
Oh, we'd love to.
This
hour goes by so fast. And, just speaking about Twitter, Voice, I applaud you for doing all of the fishing slaying that's going on out there. Kudos to you.
Yeah, I was going to actually mention the one way that you could have your funds seized, so to speak, and that is have them taken out of your account without your consent, is by giving the wrong consent. Essentially, you're still giving permission, but you're giving permission to someone you think is someone else, and that's that fishing and horribleness, but that's not what the feds are doing to get people's money. They're going through centralized exchanges.
Going through centralized exchanges. Think of your keys like keys to your front door. So when somebody says they entered your keys, think, when I hand my keys to a stranger to my house?
Yeah.
The answer is no. So we're going to end the show, so I'll be quiet here in just a second, but it's all about cons. And we have Theranos, we have Enron, we have cons all over the world. They're small and they're big, and it's if they can trick you, they will trick you. So just make sure you don't get into private conversations with people where they start sending you to websites.
Well, here comes the music. We thank you so much for spending an hour with us. We really appreciate great information. And we want to thank everybody for joining us. We know you have another hour to spend somewhere if you like, and you chose to spend it with us, and we really appreciate it. Have a great day. You can find us on Telegram and Twitter at Tokens Radio Show, and we'll see you next week.
A Bitcoin as you're going into the old blockchain. A Bitcoin, I know you're going to
ain't gonna rain till everybody knows, everybody knows, till everybody.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.